to this one, but I already know there won't be. Okay, so our last topic, Eishes Chayil, and I'm trying to capture and condense a lot here. Flip to Perek Lamed Aleph, chapter 31. This chapter is composed of two parts. The first part, sentences 1 to 9, is presented as a rebuke from the mother of King Lemuel to Lemuel, right? If you look at the opening sentence, Divrei Lemuel Melech, the words of Lemuel the king, Masa Asher Yisratu Imo. The Masa, the burden. We've noted that the word Masa sometimes refers to a harsh prophecy, although here I don't think it's meant to be prophetic. The burden with which his mother rebuked him. So we have already discussed, when we talked about authorship of the book, the fact that Jewish tradition as represented in the Medrash, Rashi, and others, is that Lemuel is actually Shlomo. This isn't some other king named Lemuel. Why is he named Lemuel here? Has to do with messages that emerge in the name Lemuel. I'm not revisiting that right now. Rabbi Moshe Kimchi, though, whose work is published under the name of Ibn Ezra, talk about Shlomo being named Lemuel, so Moshe Kimchi is being published under the name Ibn Ezra. Take a look at source number 14. He says, this is a bookend for the book. He says, "B'tchilas ha-sefer hodia ki Yisro aviv al ha-chochma." The beginning of the book said that his father rebuked him for wisdom. Shma b'ni musar avicha, right? My son, hear the rebuke of your father. So v'siper kan, here it says, sheyistarto imo bat sheva, that Shlomo's mother, bat sheva, rebuked him. Achar mos aviv, after his father passed away, lalamdo chochma, to teach him wisdom. So Shlomo is recording what his mother instructed him. And it's a beautiful rebuke. It's just a beautiful, beautiful rebuke. I'm just going to translate it quickly, because not to do it would be a terrible disservice. It has two parts to it. The first part, sentences 2 to 5, are what Shlomo should not do. Ma bari, ma barbitni, me barnidarai, the word ma, echoing here, is a word that's like a question word, but it's an expression almost of shock. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein, says, Amma nishtana, that it doesn't mean, how is this night different? It's an expression of shock. How different is this night? That's the expression of it. Like when you say ma, like hine ma tov uma na'im, right? It's how good, how pleasant it is when brothers are together. So here too, she's expressing this almost lament to her son, the product of her womb. Al titein lanashim chelecha, do not give your strength to women. You should not be running after women. Sentence 4, I'm rushing. Sentence 4, you should not be drinking wine. It is not for kings to drink wine. People of counsel should be staying away from intoxicating drink, lest they drink and they forget and they warp justice for the needy. So don't pursue hedonistic pleasure. What should you do? Sentences 6 to 9. Help out the ones who are failing. Give wine to the person who's a bitter spirit. Let him forget his bitterness. Let him forget his struggle. Open up your mouth on behalf of the mute. And this is actually a statement of Jewish law. It's a mandate for judges that when they have a vulnerable party in their court, they're not entitled to just say, well, the case will be heard normally, and if they don't win, they don't win. They have responsibility, even as they are fair, to intercede on behalf of the vulnerable. Open up your mouth, judge righteously, that's the conclusion of of this section. So don't pursue hedonism. Support the needy. Support the vulnerable. That is the first part of the chapter. The second part of the chapter is the better known part, and that is the Eishes Chayil poem. Yes, Moshe, you are correct in the chat. This is an idea that we find in the Chumash, that you are not supposed to overly help the indigent. V'dalo sehedar barivo in Parshas Mishpatim, you are not supposed to overly help the indigent. And this is a balance that the judge is required to strike. Finding a way to help those who need it without creating an imbalance. But I have news for you. That's not only a Jewish problem. If you look in the canons of legal ethics regarding secular court, civil court, including here in Canada, some of you may have been there when I gave a legal ethics class about dealing with an unrepresented, meaning self-represented litigant, and the requirement for the court to do things on behalf of that litigant while not biasing things or intimidating the fellow who has a lawyer. This is a challenge in every system. You have to find a way to help the vulnerable while keeping things fair. Going back now to Eishes Chayil. So sentences 10 to 31 are alphabetically structured. It's an acrostic in which we're told about what is always, not always, but often translated as the woman of valor. Some of you know I don't like that translation. I will give you my translation shortly. But I just want to show you on the sheets, in source number 15, Professor Yehuda Kiel in the Dot Mikra edition of Mishle provides a helpful outline of the poem. It starts out, the opening three sentences of the poem talk about how wonderful it is for the husband when he has a wife who is the Eishes Chayil. He is really fortunate, right? She's greater than pearls, and her husband can trust in her, and she does only good for him and never bad all the days of her life. And then the next sentences from sentence 4 up until, well, that's interesting. Hold on a second. Why did I do that? I'm just perplexed because in my notes, I wrote that the next section goes up until the letter Tet. But on the sheet, I wrote that it goes up until the letter Yud. So I just want to double check and see which I was misquoting him on. He ends it at the letter Tet. So if you're looking at the outline in source number 15, it goes up until the letter Tet, not until the letter Yud. It's until sentence 18, and then the next section starts with sentence 19. Clumsy. Okay. So the next section talks about how this Eshet Chayil works hard. First, how she works hard when she is needy, and that's talking about how she seeks out wool and linen, and she engages in commerce, she brings food from afar, and also when they are wealthy, when the family is doing well economically. So she buys a field, as an example of that. She plants a vineyard. This is somebody who is already wealthier, and she's able to do more. But not only is she industrious and supportive of her family, she is also described as being generous. So sentence 19 and sentence 20 describe her as being supportive, extending her hand to the needy. And then in sentences 21 to 25, it's all about the support that she provides for her family. All the ways in which she gives things to her family. Sentences 26 and 27, she teaches chesed. She teaches kindness. So you're talking about opening her mouth with wisdom. The Torah of chesed, of kindness, is on her tongue. That's the way Professor Kiel sees sentences 26 and 27. And then finally, she is to be praised. And that's what the rest of the poem is about. One of the big questions for me over the years, every time I've looked at Eishes Chayil, is the author of the opening sentences 1 to 9, the same as the author of sentences 10 to 31, meaning sentences 1 to 9 are credited to the mother of the king. King being Shlomo, mother is Bathsheba. So does Bathsheba also present the Eishes Chayil poem? That's my question. Can you argue yes or no based on the text itself. Anything there to indicate whether it is Shlomo's mother for the Eishes Chayil poem as well? I believe you can argue it both ways. Okay, so first I'll argue no. It's not the same person. First of all, the opening passage is about royalty issues. Instructions for kings, right? Help this person in judgment. Kings shouldn't be drinking. You shouldn't be running after women as the king. It's very much about royalty. Whereas the Eishes Chayil poem is, even when it's talking about buying a field, it's not talking about kings. It's talking about some are people of means, some people are people with less means, but it's, these are everyman type of issues. That's number one. Number two, the first part is standard mishle in its format, right? It's standard types of moral instruction. Whereas the second part is alphabetical acrostic. The whole Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet structure suggests this is different. Frankly, I don't think you see that anywhere in the book. Also, the first part is a set of instructions. Don't do this, do that. Whereas the second part, the Eishes Chayil poem, is all third-person description. Right? The woman of valor is like this. The woman of valor is like that. The woman of valor does this. The woman of valor does that. She speaks this way. She pursues this. Other than the closing tenulah line, it's never addressing you with, here's what you should do, the way that the first part is. So that the standard read is to say that this is really a separate section. This is not Bathsheba talking. And that's the way the Malbim reads it. If you take a look at source number 16, Malbim says, Yan hizkir hamusar shal aim lemuel shahaisa eishes chayel kamoshinir ami musara. Because it already gave us the rebuke stated by Lemuel's mother, who was an eishes chayel, you can see it based on her advice, zachar shevach eishes chayel. So now it goes on to praise the eishes chayel. And I think that's also the position of Rav Moshe Kimchi as brought in the Ibn Ezra. I had enough things to translate on here and figured I would stop. But I think he says the same thing. So all of those are basic structural and thematic reasons to say this is a new thought. That was Bathsheba. This is not. On the other hand, sentence 10 did not mention a new author. There is no paragraph break. Both parts are instructions about life. And both parts make use of the term chayil. Right? Chapter 31, sentence 3 said, don't give chayil to women. And then, in sentence 10, it says, and here's what you should pursue, an eishes chayil. Like, you could make the argument that the themes are similar enough in both parts that, the first part is telling him what he shouldn't do, fine, and this is a continuation of what he should do. You should pursue an Eishes Chayil for yourself. I'm biased. I really like the idea that the second part could still be Bathsheba speaking. I really like that idea. First of all, because then it could be Bathsheba telling Shlomo who he should be looking for as a wife. And what mother does not want to tell her son who he should be looking for a wife? And particularly in this case, because, as Professor Kiel argues in source number 17, if the Eishes Chayil is a specific woman, it's going to be Ruth, who is Shlomo's great-grandmother. Take a look at source number 17 at Professor Kiel from his comments on Megillas Rus, my translation. He says, what emerges for us from the explanation that before the eyes of the sage floated the image of a particular woman well-known, quote, at the gates, It appears to us that one could identify her based on linguistic and substantive hints we brought in the commentary and footnotes with the image of Ruth. Oh, you know what? I said in this that it's the Dhammic rendition of Ruth, but I think, let me just flip my own page here, I took it from the Dhammic of Mishle, not Ruth. That's funny, it's a mistake in the heading. Okay, in any case, he says that the image really is Ruth, mother of monarchy, the lone woman in Tanakh who merited, as we have said, to be explicitly named Eshes Chayo. Boaz says to Ruth, you are Eshes Chayo. So that, I mean, these are two different points. Let me make sure that I'm being clear, because it's too easy not to be here. Point number one is the idea that the Eshes Chayo described here is Ruth. And I think there's a lot of evidence to support that, and I think that that's what all that Professor Keel wants to say. The other point is that Bathsheba could be the speaker, that the Dot Mikra did not say, that's the one that I am biased towards. But the idea that this is Ruth makes a lot of sense, because it fits the description in the chapter about how the Eshes Chayil supports her family, and how she is so pious, and it fits the definitions of the word chayil. I said to you, I don't like translating Eshes Chayil as woman of valor. The word chayil is a flexible word in Tanakh. It almost could be said to mean any good trait you want to come up with. If you take a look at source number 18, I gave you translations of various verses which use the term Chayil. The first one from Yirmiyahu, I will give your chayil and your storehouses to be despoiled. This is a warning of punishment, as, you know, happens a lot in Yirmiyahu. But it talks about your chayil and your storehouses. By context, chayil seems to be wealth. Chayil is a reference to wealth. On the other hand, the next line talks about 800,000 ish chayil, swordsmen, people of strength, people who are mighty. Then the next line talks about brothers who were ish chayil. They were very energetic. They engaged in fruitful activity. The next line is when Moshe chooses judges, and he's supposed to pick anshei chayil, God-fearing men of truth who despise profit. It's some sort of piety. And then the last one speaks of somebody as being trusted, as in Ish Chayil. All of these traits that Chayil could mean, wealth, might, energy, piety, trustworthiness, all of these together are all terms that you could associate with Ruth. Because Ruth was somebody who gained wealth. Ruth was somebody who was strong. She went out gleaning. She was somebody who engaged in energetic, fruitful activity. She's clearly somebody of piety. And she is somebody who is faithful and trustworthy. So I'm going to come back to this and show more reasons to argue that the Eshes Chayil is Ruth. I'm not done with that. But my point here is simply to say that maybe Bathsheba is saying to Shlomo, you want to marry somebody like your great-grandmother, like Ruth. And I'm going to build on that by saying that maybe that's why Shlomo has so much trouble. Right? Shlomo says in Koheles, Isha achas me elef lo matzasi. I couldn't even find one in 1,000, right? And we have this idea, which is built on multiple sources, that Shlomo has 1,000 wives, or a certain number of wives, a certain number of concubines. He can't, because who can match Ruth? He's spending his life trying to find a Ruth to marry. I mean, that's a recipe for a shidduch crisis. They don't just come along every day. But that's what Shlomo is trying to find. Moshe, I see your hand. Hang in there, please. I wanted to point you to source number 19. The Malbim, commenting on Eshes Chayil Mi Yimtza, V'rachok mipninim michra. Who can find her? Her commerce is greater than pearls. So look what he says. He says, my English translation, one acquires something either by finding it or by working at it. Right? Typo, our should be or. Thank you, Moshe, for pointing that out. You acquire something either by finding it or by working at it, which is like purchasing something in exchange for something else. Of the first, finding it, the text says, who will find her by finding? You don't just find an Eish Eschayil. That doesn't work. Regarding transactions via work, the idea that you're going to earn her, it says that her commerce or her residence is further than pearls, which are valuable and rare. You can't buy her, so to speak. You don't have the ability to find her, and you don't have the ability to get her via commerce. It doesn't work that way. In a shiur that I gave in 2010, in my notes, I quoted something in the name of Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. I have not been able to find it in Rav Hirsch. The closest I have found is that line from the Malbim that I just brought you. But the idea was, Eish Eschayil mi yimtza, you can't find her, because you don't find a true woman of substance, you have to earn her by becoming a great man of substance. It's a beautiful line. It's the sort of thing Rav Hirsch would have said, but I can't actually find where he said it. I'm sure I didn't make it up, but I can't find it. Yes, Moshe.
Oh, I was just maybe the reason why perhaps a man might be skeptical about identifying the Eish Eschayil with Rut.
Yeah.
The Eish Eschayil seems like, to some extent, a self-made lady. She gets her wealth from her own industry.
Right.
Whereas Ruth, it seems like Ruth marries money. It seems to be her major source of wealth.
It's a good point. I mean, I would argue that the gleaning is what brings that about. So there's an earning in that sense. But it's true. The actual money that she gets comes about when she marries Boaz. It's a fair point. So, in terms of this Eish Eschayil section, I've been treating it as though it's talking about a woman, right? Or, to be truly egalitarian, it's talking about a spouse. Maybe there's a man who somehow can claim to be of Chayil also. And that could be. But on the other hand, based on Mishlei as a whole, you could reasonably identify other subjects for this poem. It doesn't have to be about a woman. Yes, it could be read that way. I actually saw an article by an Israeli educator named Yosef Achai. It was from the journal Beit Mikra, in which he was adamant that Pshat, the simple read of this text, is that it is about a woman. And he says, he brings sources to support him, authors to, not his sources, but authors to support him. And the truth is, the book has passages about marriage, right? In the beginning of chapter 14, as an example. And it fits the advice that is given to Shlomo in the first part of the chapter. Don't pursue women in general, do pursue this one. And it makes sense for Shlomo to get advice like this. Right, given the disasters of his political marriages, those who learned Malachim with me last year, and the marriage to the daughter of the Pharaoh, which causes all sorts of problems, and the frustration he speaks of in Koheles, like, it makes sense. So certainly that's one dimension to the story. On the other hand, it could also be about wisdom. We've said before, the image of a woman in Mishlei is frequently a metaphor for wisdom. Example, go back to chapter 7, sentences 4 and 5, very quickly. Chapter 7, sentences 4 and 5. Emor la chochma achosi at, say of wisdom, you are my sister. Umoda la bina tikra, and you should call understanding your moda, your relative, right? Moda la isha, Boaz actually. Lishmorcha me isha zara, to protect you from a foreign woman. Minochriya amareha hachalika, from a foreign woman whose words are expressed smoothly. So, Professor Hurwitz notes that in the beginning of the book, we have a woman as a figure who leads the reader astray, and now we have the opposite, a woman who provides not only material benefit, but also virtue. Hurwitz is in source number 20. Now, Hurwitz himself thinks it's still about a wise woman, but he's noting the association of women with wisdom in the book. He actually has a very sharp line in number 20. It's better in the Hebrew than in the English. But take a look at the last line of source number 20. The Eshet Chayil is not anthropomorphism of wisdom, but its human embodiment. In other words, we're not describing wisdom in human terms. We're describing a human being who is the embodiment of wisdom. That's the, he believes that it is a woman. He doesn't think that it's about wisdom. He thinks it's about a woman. The Rambam, Maimonides, says, yeah, it's about Chochmah. It's about wisdom. If you take a look, no, I didn't bring it on the sheet, but it's in Mora Nevuchim, section 3, number 8. He has this whole thing there about it. Of course, once we say that it's about wisdom, it could also be about Torah, because we've seen that regarding wisdom throughout the book, right? We've gone back and forth. When it says Chochmah, does it mean Torah? Does it not mean Torah? So I brought you the Medrash on Mishlei chapter 31, sometimes known as Medrash Eishes Chayil, which if you take a look, it says, who can find an Eishes Chayil? Zohi Torah. This is a reference to Torah. Very clear, very unambiguous. The Vilna Gaon says that it's a reference to Torah. And then, another view is that it's a reference to the neshama, to the soul. I know some of you were really upset that in Shir HaShirim, we spent such a little, small amount of time on the Hillel intellect and all those Greek things. So this is for you, that I brought the Malbim in source number 22, where he says, the commentators have already agreed that this statement includes a metaphor. Most explained it about the nefesh, the spirit. And when he says that, that includes the Alshich, for example, or Moshe Alshich. But in my view, it speaks of the Hillel spirit, nefesh hahiyulanit, not the eternal neshama which is sent from heaven. So for those who missed the Hillel intellect and all of that, you can go read the Malbim. You've got different layers here. It could be a woman who is wise. It could be about wisdom. It could be about Torah. It could be about the neshama, the soul. To me, it's all of the above. Remember the discussion in the beginning of the book about mashal and chida, right? Lessons with riddles and layers of meaning to them. These lessons are meant to convey multiple layers of meaning. They're not just one layer of meaning. They are multiple. And the metaphor itself has value. In Shir HaShirim, we talked about that question. Does the metaphor itself have meaning aside from whatever the layer is that it's hinting to? Here, it certainly does. The choice of language is meaningful. And I brought you the Rambam's introduction to the Mora Nevuchim in source number 23. Looking at my English translation, the sage said, he's quoting Mishlei, golden apples in silver settings, a statement properly worded. See how marvelous is this parable, describing a proper parable. It is saying that there are two aspects, the revealed and the hidden. The revealed component should be good like silver, the inner component should be even greater, until the inner component, compared to the revealed component, is like gold beside silver. You have layers, and each has value. So that even if the goal of Eishes Chayil is to talk about wisdom, you don't ignore the layer that is talking about this ideal spouse. And the Vilna Gaon says the same thing. We saw it a long time ago. It's in chapter 1, sentence 6. So I think all of these are layers of meaning in the Eishes Chayil. One last thought. If this is a woman, who is it? So we noted that it could be Ruth. I gave you some reasons. Not only are the reasons I presented to you important, but if, as I'm going to beat the dead horse, if this is really Bathsheba talking, there's a lot of similarity between Ruth and Bathsheba. Both of them loyal. Bathsheba refuses to be lured into Adoniyahu's coup against Shlomo. Ruth stays with Naomi. Both of them are tenacious in dealing with tragedy. Bathsheba loses her husband Uriah. She loses a baby. Ruth loses her husband, becomes impoverished, leaves her homeland. Both of them exert subtle control. When Adoniyahu launches his coup, Nassan the Navi knows to go to Bathsheba to weigh in with David, and she handles Adoniyahu's request when he wants to marry Avishag for himself, and Ruth manages to get Boaz to marry her. I see a lot of similarity between them. There's also, you could argue that in the advice to Shlomo, it includes that she wants Shlomo to imitate Boaz. Don't get swayed by women is like Boaz in the granary. Help those in need like Boaz did with the gleaning. Husbands should sit at the gates as Boaz did. Like, I think there's a lot to argue that the Eishes Chayil here is Ruth, Moshe's point notwithstanding. The Medrash, though, goes further. If you take a look at source number 26, you see what I gave you there? This is a table I wrote many, many, many years ago. I don't know how many years. It's got to be 20 years ago. Of the Medrash Eishes Chayil, the Medrash on our chapter. Actually, no, this is not Medrash Eishes Chayil. I'm sorry. No, it is. It is. I'm skipping something in my notes. Let me do it in proper order. Source 25 first. Source number 25 is the Medrash Tanchuma, which associates different lines in Eishes Chayil with Abraham's eulogy for Sarah, based on verses in Bereshit about Sarah, or about Abraham and Sarah's family, that they think link to things here. So, for example, Haisa Ka'anio Socher, she was like the boat of the merchant traveling from place to place. Abraham and Sarah traveled from place to place. Gimelas Hutov V'lo Ra, she gives him good, not bad. Paro gives Abraham wealth because of Sarah. Ul Abraham Heitiv Ba'avura. So if you look up these lines in number 25, you'll see associations with Sarah. So maybe this is Avram's eulogy for Sarah. And then finally, number 26, different women in Jewish history. The Medrash on Eishes Chayil links each verse in Eishes Chayil with a different woman from Jewish history. So there's that also. Okay.
My dad's Noah's wife.
I'm sorry?
In my book.
No, that's the first one. Naama is what they're referring to.
Oh, that's Noah's wife. Okay.
Yeah, the Medrash, the same Medrash that's talking about Noah's wife, calls Naama Noah's wife. That's correct. So there's a lot more you could say here, obviously. I just wanted to at least address Eishes Chayil on some level. Hopefully what we got from it is the value of each of the layers that are in it, the possibility that it's a reference to Ruth specifically, the idea that it could be many women who are found throughout Tanakh being brought here as models for the ideal wife, and the question of is Bathsheba the author of Eishes Chayil or only the first part of the chapter. I gave you at the end review questions. The first 9 come from our introduction. The last 5 come from the things that we did after the introduction. Hopefully they'll be helpful. I apologize for rushing so much today, but this is what we have. If I get a chance later, Bli Neder, I will send the sources, the added sources regarding hitting that speak to the issue of corporal punishment for children. It's an important topic. It's just a question of me finding the time. But thank you so much, everybody. And again, we resume the Tuesday after Pesach, and we will be learning Koheles, God willing. So bring your Tanakh, bring your Koheles, if not your Tanakh, and that should be interesting. Thank you very, very much. Chag Kashrut Sameach.